Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Property Nomads podcast and this Getting Started in Property mini series. And today we've got a really interesting interview lined up with Kay Hallinan. Kay and her partner are British, but they've been living in Asia for the last 10 years. They have three children and are building a large portfolio over here in the UK using a mixture of latest technologies such as WhatsApp, etc., and also working with deal sources. So on today's episode, we're going to touch base on how Kay and her family have been able to do that and what they've got planned for in the future. So Kay, thank you very much for your time.
Hi Rob, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Yourself?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No, it's great. Thank you for reaching out initially on email, to be honest. The massive amount of text you sent was really informative, really insightful. And I thought there were some great points here that we can talk about a bit later on. But the first thing that will spring to mind for people when they think about investing in the UK is, you know, you're either UK-based and you do it, or you might live in Europe or whatever. But there seems to be this growing trend of people much further afield investing in the UK. So, I mean, how have you found that experience so far?
In the beginning, it definitely was challenging. Because we're both British, we used to live in the UK. Of course, it's much easier for us compared to Singaporeans or, you know, foreigners. I think it's taken a good couple of years to really work out how we can do it, what we need to do. Previously, we very much relied on when we go back to the UK for a holiday, we would go and view properties and do it like that. And now we've kind of moved on and I guess leverage other people and use their expertise. And we've bought several properties without viewing.
Awesome stuff. And for some people that will be a big no-no because of just of how they are. So how have you managed to manage that process? Is that a mixture of like things like Skype, WhatsApp, or, you know, other bits and pieces?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was using my father-in-law. So he lived close to the investment area we were interested in. So we used him to view for us. He would take pictures, no videos, you know, they're a bit older, not so into videos, but would take pictures and we trust his opinion in terms of the structure of the property. So, but in terms of the look and what we want or what we thought was right for the market, you know, we just had to judge that based on photos and market research.
Awesome stuff. And you've been in Asia for 10 years and you bought your first investment property about 3 years ago. A personal question, I suppose. How have you ended up over in Singapore?
So it's through my husband's work. We moved out to the Philippines 10 years ago and we stayed in the Philippines 5+ years. You know, we signed the contract to make it a permanent move. And then a few months later, a company offered him a position in Tokyo. So then we moved there and we were in Tokyo for 3 years and now we're in Singapore. So we've been in Singapore 2.5 years. And it's all through my husband's work. And I'm half Japanese, so we always kind of wanted to live in Tokyo for a while, and we got to do that, and we love it in Asia. It works really well with, you know, the family, the kids, having help, having swimming pools, nice weather, all of that. So it's a great place to be.
Hey, we've got our whole hands up. We're recording this in December, so thanks for reminding me of the nice warm weather and swimming pools when I look out my window at the glumness that surrounds me. But that's fantastic. I must admit, on a travelling note, I've never been to Japan, but I'd always sort of, I think I'd be fascinated by the culture and just how they do things over there. I mean, I can't even begin to describe what it must be like being out in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different. Of course, for me, it was a lot easier. I can speak the language at a basic level. My husband couldn't speak anything. And for him, it was very alien. The work environment, the people, everything, you know, it's a difficult place. It's just so different. But what I really like about living in different countries is you see the buildings, you know, I kind of have a vision of what I would love to eventually do is take different parts, as in Japan, they do water really, really well. And say like the Philippines and Singapore, they do bling very well. So it's kind of nice to see different perspectives of how different countries build.
I totally agree with you on that. My favourite thing from travelling through China was bamboo scaffolding. holding up like
Oh, yeah.
motorways. It's just brilliant. Anyway, I suppose back to the bricks and mortar. So you got your first investment property about 3 years ago. So what process led you and your husband to deep diving into property then?
I think, our first property purchase was in Stratford, East London. We were buying just before, we were looking to buy just before the Olympic announcement. And the prices were sort of 170, 175, 180. And every week we would view, and the properties were getting snapped up so quickly. Then we managed to secure a property at 201,000. And then I think it was a few weeks later, as conveyancing started, they announced that London got the Olympics. And then the agency called me and said that you can still buy it, but you have to pay £35,000 more, something like this. And I was, heartbroken. We couldn't really afford that. And I was lucky enough that I bumped into the owner, the vendor, and we had a chat. And she said, "No, I'll still sell it to you. Don't worry." And so we managed to still secure and go through with the sale. But I guess going through that process, we got to see how crazy property prices can be. So I've never, when purchasing our first investment property, I wasn't thinking about return on investment or yields or any of that. I was just thinking bricks and mortar, capital gains, and that's what I wanted to grow.
Yeah, no, it's a very well, I say hindsight's a wonderful thing as well. There's obviously a great area with the Olympics. I remember, I think my brother 3 or 4 years ago bought somewhere in Canning Town, so just around the corner, and I don't think he not as meticulous as myself, and he hadn't sort of planned it as such, but he's then moved to South London. But yeah, the amount he made a decent chunk in the couple of years that he was there, just because of the fundamentals of the area. So that's good. So maybe let's just say bit of luck, more than anything else, if that's a fair thing to say. But
Timing, I think timing.
timing is everything sometimes. So we've got that one, and then you said on when we were speaking off air that your first investment property in sort of Bunyears was in Colchester, and you said it's not the best investment for a couple of reasons. Why is that?
Well, because we weren't thinking as an investor. I wasn't educated in terms of what is ROI, what what is a good yield and all of that. For us, on paper, it covered the mortgage and it covered the costs, and so I thought that was good, I guess. And it was a nice property, great location. I very much focused in the beginning on location and where I saw capital growth to be. So from that perspective, we bought there, but then we bought in 2017. I think, was it 2016 when Brexit got announced? And pretty much prices have not moved in that area. Nothing's really happened. So from a capital growth perspective, which is kind of why we were buying it, it hasn't done anything. In terms of, I can kind of feel proud, I guess, if you want to call it, with the property itself, because the estate agencies, when we were asking for valuations of what could be the rental once refurbished, they said that £800 max. And then once we did refurbish, they would say, "Oh, let's put it on the market at 895." And the first people to view it offered full asking. We got it tenanted straight away. So from that perspective, I kind of felt, oh, if you do a nice job, you can really actually push the ceiling for rents.
100% definitely, and everything's a learning curve, and the key thing was getting it done. And many people will struggle to get that first one over the line. I mean, the first one's not normally the best one anyway,
Yeah, absolutely.
so that's probably an important factor to point out. And then since then, you've kind of gone from strength to strength, but you mentioned that you I'm sure that people are probably listening and thinking the same thing, that you've had issues with your spouse over
Yeah.
sort of similar mentality or certain property related things. So I mean, please do feel to deep dive into that as much as you want to, because I think that's quite poignant for couples that are listening to the show.
Yeah, I mean, he's more risk averse, and he didn't want to have a lot of debt. I kind of saw property as a good investment. He saw it as a lot of debt, more pressure for him to, you know, work, get pay rises, maintain his job, etc. So yeah, we kind of I saw the prices in Colchester creep up over a couple of years. And, you know, in the beginning, we wanted to view the property before we purchased it. But it wasn't, you know, timing is very difficult. We're there in the summer for 3 weeks. We've got three kids, and trying to view properties and squeeze everything in is challenging. So we missed out on a lot of properties, which could have been a really good investment. And then, so when it finally came down to, there was a property in Colchester that I really, really loved. It went under offer quickly, and then it came back on the market, but we weren't in the position to purchase because we weren't there to view it. And then that got sold again. The next door came up. And so I was like, I want it. We kind of had a few fights. I got my way, and then it was financially a little bit challenging because we borrowed the deposit of my mum. And paying it back, we didn't realize our time in Tokyo, his tax rate increased 10% in our second year. And then one of our kids went to international school. So that was a big chunk. So then we were kind of like, oh, well, how are we going to pay this deposit back? So it wasn't, he was kind of thinking, oh, I wish we didn't buy that place. And I still felt like it was a good investment, but you know, it was a strain, I guess. So we didn't really do anything for a couple of years after that. And then when we moved to Singapore, and new job, new lifestyle environment, the income, the disposable income was similar, so nothing there changed. But I did send my husband a link to a podcast that I'd listened to, and it was talking about leverage and using that and how that works. And he listened to it, he came home and he said, why aren't we doing this? And I was like, oh, hallelujah, we got there. So yeah, so that the first investment property was our third property. So we had the one in East London, we had a family home in Kent that we moved to prior to moving to Asia. So then we decided to remortgage one of the properties and, you know, really look at investing properly.
That's great stuff. I love that, the fact that you and your husband talking about it for quite a while, and then you're sending him, you know, a few videos and podcasts, and he comes back and it's all of a sudden it's a great idea. And I just imagine the look on your face when he would have said that.
Yeah, I was like, exactly, why didn't you say that 3 years ago? Or yeah, it's hard to kind of, because I'd been watching YouTube videos, I'd been listening to podcasts, reading some books, and I was really interested in property, but he wasn't so much. So he didn't pick up and know the things that I was hearing, and he just heard me say, yeah, let's buy. And he didn't really get it. But then, yeah, after he listened to the podcast, I think he gets it.
It just sounds like great teamwork at the end of the day, to be honest with you, Kay. So that's fantastic. And from there, you've gone from, well, I mean, yeah, not that property's a competition, but from there, you've gone from strength to strength. So it seems like once your husband had this light bulb moment, that it's just, you know, floodgates open, and you've sort of, you know, aggressively purchased, and you've started to diversify in terms of area. So talk us more about how you've managed that process and what you're doing nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it doesn't feel very aggressive. It just feels like, you know, we tried to grow our portfolio and use the money in the existing properties to do that. I guess we liked Colchester, and I still believed in it, even though nothing really happened capital growth wise. I think it's a great location. I like the period style properties. I love, you know, Victorian, Georgian, and I'm not a big new build fan person, and I'm definitely not flats. So we stuck to Colchester for a while because we had my father-in-law there who could help us and who could vet the properties for us. And then as my education improved, I realized, well, this is actually not really a great return on your investment. You know, we could do better. So we started to look further north. We chose Stockport, and we did buy a property there, but the prices just kept going up and up and up. And really, I feel like we were priced out straight away. I think it's a great location potentially for capital growth, but in terms of the ROIs we were looking for, we can't meet that there anymore. So we just really wanted to diversify our portfolio a little bit. So we have the capital growth stuff in the south, but we also want to diversify and have something a little bit more guaranteed
That's incredibly sensible as well, because as you know already, there's a couple of ways to do buy-to-lets, aren't there? And that is, number one, looking at the capital growth, as you say, predominantly in the south, as you've said with Stratford and areas like that, or just most of the south in general. And then normal rule of thumb is the more further north you go, the better the ROI becomes. That's where the true cash flow is. Of course, there are a couple of exceptions there. You've pointed out one of them. I think the other really a good exception is York. York is like the anomaly of the north. Very expensive to live there. Not London style prices, but given the surrounding areas, so it makes it an anomaly. And all of this you've been doing, again, that's what we love about this, is been doing this whilst you've been in Singapore, bar the a visit or two every year. So how have you found the mortgage process on that? As I'm guessing you'd be classed as an expat now because you've been over in Asia for so long. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. So we're expats. So generally, we have to pay more for our mortgages than, if we were based living and working in the UK. I think, just recently, though, we managed to secure like a portfolio lending. It's not exactly portfolio, but we've and it's a much better rate, 2.56, I think. And previously with the expat mortgages, we were looking at 3.49 and 3.19. So yeah, just very recently. So we're actually in the process of remortgaging four or five properties, I think, with them. And so I'm happy to have found that.
And how did you come across that? Was that through a mortgage broker? Was that just through Googling? How have you managed to secure
I
that
think,
portfolio loan?
that was through Property Tribes. So on the forum, there were some conversations, and someone mentioned portfolio lending, and I've never heard of it before. So then I just inquired into that, and then got a bit more information. And of course, you need a minimum loan amount, but we managed to reach that and get better rates for it.
I can imagine you took a bit of time to analyse the, or I imagine on a spreadsheet, the sort of the cost differential between paying a low interest rate versus, the early repayment charges, and
Yes,
pretty fruitful to go down
absolutely.
that route.
I love a little bit of Excel and numbers, and I get a bit addicted to analyzing what if, and should we do interest only, and what if it goes up by this percent, and so I did all of the geek stuff, and then we decided it's definitely worth it because once we've got the minimum loan amount with them, all our future mortgages can go with them as well.
Superb. Well, that sounds like a great plan. Nonetheless, everything under one roof does make things a lot easier, to
Yeah,
say
definitely.
the least. In terms of growing a portfolio, so you mentioned you've got a variety of properties at the moment in different areas of England, which is great. In dealing with sourcing agents, now I've done a few episodes recently, and but I'm not here tarnishing sourcing agents. I think they do valuable job, provide a great service. Of course, there's always a few that ruin it for everyone else. How have you found, number one, how have you found property sources, as in how did you find them? And then number two, how have you found sort of the deals that they've been offering? Have they been good? Have they been stuff that you could find on Rightmove? Talk us through the sourcing process and how you found that so far.
I think, so looking on the Facebook forums, the things like Progressive Property Group, and just following people's conversations and chats. And then when I came across some people who I thought, oh, well, they seem decent, they've got a great attitude, and they're obviously boasting and posting about their returns and, how well they're doing for their investors. So then I would reach out to them and speak with them. I think in the beginning it looks amazing. They're talking about 20% ROI. Now, when I take the numbers and actually put it to a property that they're then offering, and I put my numbers on it, and considering my rates that I have to pay as an expat and all the solicitors' fees, mortgage fees, everything, I think most of them don't include things like guest safety certificate. It's small, but it's relevant and it's part of the calculations, especially when you're looking at cheaper properties with lower values, then even the small amounts make a difference to the percentage. And I just found that it was nothing like what they're advertising. So that's difficult, and I'm still struggling to really find someone to work with.
Yeah, I think social media is an interesting monster, to be perfectly honest with you, because it's very easy to, have this sort of visual aspect of, oh, I've got X, Y, and Z going on, and this is happening, that's happening, my life's great, etc., etc. But actually, when you, it's like an onion. Once you start taking off layers, it's either going to make you cry or it's going to start revealing other bits and pieces. So yeah, I always say to people, caveat emptor with social, but it's such a great platform in order to, connect with people. I think that's
It
important
is.
as well.
Yeah, it is. It's such a great platform to connect with people, but then you don't really, once you start talking with them, I kind of quickly realized the ones who are professional, who do this well, who have been doing it a while, they will charge a lot and the ROIs will be less. And then the newbies, they're actually, I feel like I'm a test project or something. They don't really know what they're doing. They're just, but they still want to charge for services that they don't have experience in, but they feel like they deserve it probably because they paid a lot of money for training and they have, mentors and other people's experience to leverage. And, I all for them, good luck. Please, I hope they do really well. But it's difficult and it's time wasting. And I think if you're not experienced as a maybe a Singaporean or a foreign investor, they wouldn't know that and they wouldn't see that. And they would just go ahead and use them, and they're really fluffing their numbers.
Do you think, hypothetically, it's a hypothetical question now, do you think that if you were living in the UK, do you think that you would work with a newbie property sourcer because you might have that peace of mind of something along the lines of, well, at least I can drive and see the property and check out the area? Do you think because you're over in Singapore that you only want to work with people that have been doing this for years and years and years, because that might have, then there might be more trust there automatically because of their experience.
Yes, I guess so, because then I would have more confidence in going to physically check. But at the same time, why am I using them if, what can they bring? Like you said, a lot of them just kind of send you stuff that's already on Rightmove. They haven't even negotiated a price. They haven't even secured it with the agency. They're just kind of offering this to you, saying you could get X amount of rent for this and something like that. I don't know. There are a lot of people who I think start out sourcing in property, and I kind of feel that's the wrong way around. You don't really understand what you're selling because you haven't experienced being a landlord. You haven't really experienced trying to rent out a property. You don't really know what's going to work in that area.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept, actually. I hadn't thought of that, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that's a very good point you make there, Kay. And as you say, on the lower value prop, well, I suppose on properties in general, but yeah, especially when you look at your annual gas safety, 50 quid or so, EPC if it needs to be redone because you're improving the property, 50 quid. But again, that lasts 10 years, or nowadays, or coming up, electrical safety. So again, a 5 year thing, but still possibly 150 quid for the test, and maybe 300, 400, 500 quid if you need to put a new consumer unit in and things like that. And as you say, once you've got the experience, like yourself, like you have, then you just become more alert about different things, I suppose, over time. For the portfolio moving forwards, then, do you and your husband have any goals about what you're doing and where you're going with your portfolio?
Our goal is within 10 years to replace my husband's income, and then it would just, if he decided he didn't want to work anymore, then he wouldn't have that financial burden to support the family or anything like that. So that's really kind of the main reason why I wanted to start investing in property, is just to have that security and that passive income, something for us that didn't rely on a company or a job. So that's our ultimate goal. I think, to get there, we might have to, do some flips along the way or something like that. I'm not really sure. Yeah, we're just trying to grow the portfolio for now. Hopefully, in 10 years, we reach that, or within 10 years, and then slowly pay down the mortgages and perhaps consolidate a little bit. So, I don't really want 50 cheap houses that are giving me 50 headaches. I'd rather, you know, have 10 decent houses and be a bit more passive.
Yeah, I love the thinking on that. As Aaron and I are having the same debates as well, to be honest. It's how many properties do we want or do we need? And then it's a case of, well, if we want that much, then do we want that many headaches? Can we not just have a better quality product with a lot less of that and lower mortgages? So and I suppose as well, in terms of economical thinking, because I find that, you know, a lot of people that are new to this, you've been doing this for years, so of course you're not new to this. In terms of economics, do you pay much attention to what's going on around the world in terms of, you know, markets being in bubbles, etc.? And if you do, does that have a bearing on your investment, or are you just, you know, cracking on and you're doing what you're doing?
No, I try. You know, I don't really understand it, but I do listen to some like economics podcasts and things as well. Yeah, it's a very confusing time, I guess. There's all the quantitative easing and stuff going on, and what does it really mean? You know, I kind of think on one side, it might just mean you're going to have a huge boom at some point. I'm not saying in the next 2 years, but perhaps within 10 years, you know, like property prices will double, treble, who knows? But it might just be a kind of a different time now, and the systems and the government, they'll just keep pumping money in. So you're not really ever going to have that inflation, the hyperinflation. I don't know. It's a very complicated area and everyone says different things. So I don't really know what to think about that, to be honest. It does have a bearing on what we think about property and where we should invest. But I guess that's why we're trying to spread our portfolio into a little bit more cash flow as well as capital growth.
Awesome stuff. That's good to hear. So I wasn't asking for a crystal ball, yeah. You know, prediction or anything like that. I just find that through speaking to people, it's people just seem to be, in my opinion, oblivious to what's going on in the outside world in terms of economics and, you know, things that are happening. I find that concerning personally, but then when it comes to that sort of stuff, I guess I'm quite risk averse.
So what do you think? Will you still be investing in 2021?
Yes and no. In terms of, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, if we go back to 2020, Aaron and I sort of at the start of the year, once all this kicked off, we kind of down tools a little bit, but we've actually ended up having probably our best year in the business. So that's been a bit, you know, odd. And I think it'll be the same for 2021. It'll be, you know, let's increase the cash flow where we can, keep cash in the bank for, you know, opportunities that pop up, because there's always opportunities. But I just think I think housing's in a bubble in the UK and it will pop at some point. So we've just been busy trying to get everything secured on, you know, relatively long mortgages. As I said on the podcast recently, I'm coming from that point of view from a buy-to-let perspective. If I was doing serviced accommodation, then maybe my outlook would be a bit different, because, you know, people are, you know, especially if you're aiming at the contractor market, people are up and down the country, people have still got to work, you know, there's all these, you know, exemptions of jobs that, you know, you can do. So I'm saying all that with my buy-to-let head on. So I think for us, 2021 is, we'll keep cash in the bank, we'll keep our eyes out for opportunities, because they will pop up. But, you know, just erring on the side of caution. But we'll be in this for years. And I don't know if that's, I know you've got a goal for yourself for 10 years, but I imagine once you've achieved that goal, then if a good quality opportunity came up, then you'd still look at it, I guess, rather than just rubbish it because you've reached a particular number.
Yeah, absolutely. But then maybe you could start to be a bit more choosy. And then I would start to get the kids a bit more involved. Hopefully they're into it and, you know, they can take over the company. But yeah, I mean, having cash in the bank and then wanting to spend it because you don't want it to sort of deflate away, or but then waiting for that good opportunity. It's a funny balance. It's a funny place to be and not really sure when to spring. For us as well as expats, we have the surcharge coming in. So as well as the stamp duty reverting back to normal in, is it March, April, we have a 2% surcharge coming in. So, you know, there's a lot of incentive to buy and complete before then.
Yeah, and I would imagine that even once that surcharge comes in, as you've just highlighted, that from an expat point of view, it means that you can just be a little bit pickier and a little bit choosier when it comes to, you know, looking at future deals. Maybe it just means you have to knock a bit more off the asking price, so, you know, things like that. So it could always work in your favour.
Maybe, maybe.
Time will tell. Well, Kay, my only last question was actually a legacy question, which you just touched upon there about your children. After you've achieved your goals and, you know, hopefully, you know, maybe we'll catch up at some point to see how you're doing. But in terms of the business and the legacy, is that something that you and your husband would leave to your children if they're interested? Because it seems to be quite a few people in property nowadays that look to the next generation to just pass it on. Is that something that's crossed your mind at all?
Yes, absolutely. You know, we're doing it all kind of for them, really. I've been lucky enough that my grandfather started a commercial property business. And so that was my mum and my uncles. And then my mum bought my uncle out. And then it was mine and my brothers. And I bought my brother out. So this is all quite a recent thing. So, you know, we have just three commercial properties in that company. But, you know, I appreciate that my mum has taught me that kind of very passive, and I would like to, in one way, I would definitely like to get into more commercial, but at the same time, you know, it's very hit and miss. You really have to be careful with commercial where you're investing, but I do see that as the ultimate passive investment, which, you know, yeah, which is where I would like to be further down the line.
And finally, just to wrap up, what top tips do you have? If you had three top tips to give to people that are just starting out in property or people that are looking to buy property in the UK from far away, what top tips, what would you say to them?
Join the Facebook community, really start to stalk people and get to know what they're about, who they're about. And you really have to do your own research. It doesn't matter if a sourcer, deal packager tells you it's going to give you X amount of rent. You have to go and you have to call up the local estate agencies, check with them. You have to check on Rightmove, on Open Rent. You have to do your own research because, you know, more often than not, they're just trying to sell you something, I feel. So how many tips was that? I don't really know. And speak to a good mortgage broker.
Perfect. So in reverse order, mortgage broker, do your due diligence and stalk people online.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Yeah, pretty much. By the way, people, yeah, if you do go out and start doing that, please don't send any harassment claims to the Property Nomads podcast. You know, diligently follow people.
We're not liable.
We're not liable. We're not liable at all. No, I think that's sound advice. And I think, Kay, thank you for, you know, sharing your story there and sharing, you know, where you were at the start and then where you and your husband are now. And I guess, you know, all the best for moving on in the future.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think the biggest thing is I'm kind of jealous of the property community you have in the UK. You know, there's not a lot of investors in Singapore that I've managed to connect with. And it's really nice that you guys have each other. And it seems like a great environment. And it will be any people listening in Singapore, please connect with me because I would love to talk property.
Lovely. And if people did want to do that, Kay, what is the best way to do that?
Well, you could connect on Facebook. So my name is Kay Hallinan, KayHallinan. That's probably the best place.
Awesome stuff. And we'll put your name in the show notes as well so people can find you. Well, Kay, it's been absolutely fantastic. Thanks for sharing your story and best of luck moving forward.
Thank you, Rob.